Hello there, and welcome to North Shore Sports Night on this cloudy Monday evening here on the North Shore. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And this is our Monday night sports interview program that we've been doing for a long time now. A long time. You know, it's been about 11 years. Hard to believe, but we are still at it. Tim Kearns is off tonight, and Bill Newell, the voice of the North Shore, of course, contributing as he always does. We've got a lot of updates. And Bill has our sports report every morning here on MSO News Sports, and we get that posted up around 8 o'clock. And again, that's available 24/7. And we might as well take a look at that. If you get a chance, go ahead and do that right now on the website. If you're listening to us on MSO Radio Live, if you check the tabs, up at the top of the page, you'll see right in the top left-hand corner over MSO News Sports, you'll see News and Sports Radio 24/7. I have a news update every morning. Bill Newell has Sports Report, and we post our interviews up there as well as we go along and get new stuff during the day. And if you're looking at this on an iPad or an iPhone or whatever, and you have a drop-down menu instead, you do Pages, drop-down menu, and you will see News and Sports Radio 24/7. You will also see fall football broadcast schedule. Not posted yet, not the new one, but we do have it. And I'll take a look at that here this evening. Also take a look at what's going on in the Intertown Twilight League baseball playoffs that have begun. And we'll talk to our usual cast of characters. We'll talk with sports historian and golf writer Gary Larrabee. Hope to chat with the Gloucester Times sports editor Nick Kukuru. Not sure if we're going to make it or not, but we'll give that a shot. And I also will be chatting with the new Gloucester High School principal. That sounds a little weird, I know. But James Cook is also a former boys soccer coach in the Northeastern Conference at Gloucester, very successful, and he is the new principal at Gloucester High. So we'll have an interview coming up with him, and I may need your help. I may ask you to give me a call and talk some sports. I may just throw some topics out there, see what the reaction might be. Certainly, sports on the professional level is wild around here right now with the Patriots opening training camp, the Red Sox on a mediocre road trip to this point. And today is the trading deadline in Major League Baseball. So all of that's on the table here. But first, let's take a look at the high school football broadcast schedule that Bill and I have amassed here. And I'll run this kind of quick through it. And then we will have it posted hopefully later on this week. If not by tomorrow, then certainly by the end of the week. But as we have it, on the first weekend of high school football, and this is all tentative and subject to change, of course, primarily Northeastern Conference, but we are hoping to expand that, get into a couple of Capan League games at least, and cover some other stuff as well. And we're going to be very heavy on all the other sports in covering them and getting video interviews, news interviews, sports interviews, radio interviews, and all that sort of thing that we'll post every single day, along with some other programming. We've got some new programs coming up. We've got a lot of live programming and, of course, our live streaming video. More on that as we go along. You may have also seen the promo we have up there on the next Unfinished Music broadcast. It's a live in-studio, unplugged concert that we do a couple of times a month from Greg Verga's Unfinished Music Studio. And our next musical guest will be Brian King. So that's coming up as well. Take a look at that. But anyway, back to the football schedule. Here we go. On the first weekend, September 9, we will have our usual two broadcasts. We will have Swampscott at Lynn English and Gloucester at Lynn Classical. That's a doubleheader coming out of Manning Field. The video game will be Gloucester at Lynn Classical. That will be live streaming video. Bill Newell, Tim Kearns will be at those games. Winthrop will be at Danvers, and that will be our opening broadcast on probably Channel B once we get it back. And Paul Ingram and I will be covering that game. Former Gloucester High School football coach Paul Ingram and I will be doing that. On Saturday, now, the Saturday games at Beverly are tentative because we don't know if there will be a press box, and we don't know if we'll have electricity, if we'll have an avail for our camera, and so on. So the at Beverly games at the moment are tentative, and we hope on Saturday, September 10, to have Wakefield at Beverly. The following weekend, we'll be back to Manning Field on Friday night. It will be St. Mary's at Lynn English, and in our video game, it will be Malden at Peabody. On the 17th, on Saturday, again, we hope to have Gloucester at Beverly, but we might have Lynn Classical at Swampscott. Either one of those games is a video possibility. on the 23rd, the third weekend. Let's see. Our radio game will be Swampscott at Gloucester, and our simulcast game with live streaming video is Marblehead at Danvers, back to Dr. Deering Stadium. On Saturday, once again, tentatively, Peabody at Beverly. On the fourth weekend of high school football, 9:30, September 30, it will be Danvers at Lynn Classical and Revere at Gloucester. Those will be our Friday night games. And then on Saturday, once again, tentatively, it will be Lynn English at Beverly. Boy, Beverly's got a lot of home games here. On the 7th, on October 7, that is, the video game will be Danvers at Lynn English. That will be our simulcast game. And we'll also have then Gloucester at Winthrop. That will be that's possibly a video game. We're not sure if it's going to be Danvers at Lynn English or Gloucester at Winthrop. We're not sure which video we'll do for that one. So that one is kind of tentative. But we will have a live streaming video game. And then on the 8th, on October 8th, which is a Saturday, Salem is at Swampscott, and that will be a 1 p.m. game, of course. The following weekend, October 14, it is Lynn English at Peabody. Our video game will be Marblehead at Lynn Classical. On the 15th, once again, Danvers at Beverly, tentatively. And then on October 21, either Beverly at Lynn Classical or Gloucester Saugus, and our video game will be Peabody at Danvers. And after that, it's the playoffs. And, of course, that's all TBA on October 28, November 4, and the weekend of November 11. And then on the 24th, guess what? That is Thanksgiving. Our usual games, Lynn Classical versus Lynn English, and Gloucester this year will be at Danvers, and that will be our video game, Gloucester at Danvers. And, of course, our videographer, our streamographer, Andrew Nicastro, and he'll be doing these games, and when he can't be there, Alex Sanfilippo will be doing the games for us as well. So there it is. We're in August, and we're about 5 weeks away from the start of the high school football season, if you can believe that. And we are getting pumped up, and we have a whole brand new list of sponsors, some great returning sponsors and advertisers. We so appreciate their involvement, and we'll have a whole list of those, and can't say enough about them to thank them so much for keeping this endeavor going. We keep it free. We're able to put this out on the air for free. We have the website for free. All these interviews are done. And as you know, if you've seen this stuff, Bill and I, being former educators, and along with all the people who are associated with MSO, we like to take a real positive look at high school sports and sports in the area. It doesn't have to be just high school, but all the sports in the area, and we try to keep it positive. And I think we've done that, and we will continue to do that. Any comments, questions, complaints, concerns, suggestions, send them along to msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. And, you know, the news sports, we put the two words together, took out one of the S's, so it's news ports or new sports, however you want to look at it. Okay, we'll take our first break of the evening, and we'll come back and talk with Gary Larrabee, our sports writer, extraordinaire sports historian, golf expert on stuff that's going on, and there could be some real local interest in today's events as well. So please stay with us, and we'll be right back. This is MSONewsSports.com, and this is North Shore Sports Night on a Monday night.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodright replacement windows. Why Anderson? With low-E glass, low-maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastown, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, right on cue, Gary Larrabee has joined us, sports historian, golf writer, and just a general super knowledgeable about everything in sports. But, Gary, I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing wonderful, Rick, and I'm telling you, just the golf stuff just keeps on coming.
All right, this is great. This is good stuff. And I have before me Reading the Greens with Gary Larrabee, and, of course, the headline is the Mass Junior Amateur, which was scheduled to begin today at Kernwood, and so I turn it over to you.
Thank you. It was the first round today. There were lots of threatening skies, but no rain, and Noah Peterson, a junior, 16-year-old from the country club of Wilbraham, where they make all that fabulous Friendly's ice cream, was the only player to make a par shot 70. leading the field going into a tomorrow's second round, and then there'll be a cut, 50 low scores and ties. The best local scorer after today's first round is right there at 71, Chris Francoeur from Amesbury Golf and Country Club. St. John's prep player, terrific talent. And when we thought, of course, that it might be Mark Turner from Bass Rocks in Gloucester who would be in the hunt, he's not out of it. He shot 76, so quite disappointing to Mark. I'm sure he tied for 20th after one run at the 50-hole tournament. So lots of good players. And, of course, the amazing thing is, Rick, that these kids know how to shoot low numbers. Now, the last time this tournament was played here, 1993, the winning score was 213, 3-over by a fellow named James Driscoll from Charles River, who went on to the PGA Tour playing the web.com tour right now. But we may have another star in the making here. We'll see how these next 2 days evolve.
Sounds good. Gary, you got such a great article in the Salem News, Gloucester Times, about the Mass Amateur, and especially at Kernwood. For those who don't get those papers, give us a little thumbnail, a little background on the story you wrote about the history of this tournament.
Well, this is only the third time the tournament's come to Kernwood. Mike Dimitrovic won this event in, I believe it was 1978, I haven't got my stuff right in front of me, Rick, but Kernwood's been a terrific tournament course for many years now, and of course they've had in the last 10 years a Mass Open, a Mass Amateur, a New England PGA Championship, and now a Mass Junior Championship. And just looking at the scores from today, we've got 19 kids at 75 or better. Yes, as you know, Rick, it's a wonderful tournament golf course, and here we go again. Kernwood's been very generous to the Mass Golf Association, the Women's Golf Association of Massachusetts, and the New England PGA, and here we are with another big tournament week at Kernwood.
Who qualifies? Who gets to play in this Mass Junior Amateur, Gary? How is that decided?
They have regional qualifying all around the state, and you shoot a good enough score to qualify, you get in. They have 144 players at Kernwood, Rick, and you got to break 80, maybe break 77 or 78 in your local qualifier. And we have supposedly the best junior players in the state here at Salem for this event at Kernwood. So we'll see how it evolves the next couple of days. And we'll just mention a couple more local scores, if you'll allow me.
Of course.
Samuel Karen from Ferncroft shot 77, and as did the host player in the field, Christian Emmerich from Kernwood. He shot 77 as well. They have a lot of catching up to do to catch up with Noah Peterson from the Country Club of Wilbraham.
All right. Now, what's your take on the PGA, Gary? I saw a couple of rounds. I saw one round with a spectacular ocean in the background there, and then I saw the finish, I want to say, with Johnny Walker red, but I guess it's not Johnny Walker. But I don't know. What's your take on the PGA?
Well, the best man clearly won. Jimmy Walker was up there at the top of the leaderboard every day of the week. Some crazy weather. They had to play Walker had to play 36 holes on Sunday. Most of the leaders did, and he was hard-pressed all the way by some of the big names, like Jason Day, of course, who finished second, and Henrik Stenson, who just won the British Open a couple of weeks ago, and he fought them off as well as everybody else. He had to shoot good numbers every day. He did, and he was a worthy champion. The amazing thing this week is, Rick, that Walker's victory, beard and all, made him the fourth first-time major championship winner this year. It doesn't happen very often that they're all first-time winners, but that was the case this year with Denny Willett from England, Dustin Johnson from America, Henrik Stenson from Sweden, and Jimmy Walker, another American. So like we've said so many times before, it's anyone's game out there in some respect, whoever gets it going, and this was certainly Jimmy Walker's week, and we're very very pleased to see him win. He's got a great game. He's a little bit of a late bloomer. He's in his mid-30s, but he's a player to watch, and he'll certainly be a member of the Ryder Cup team that will be taking on the Americans against the Brits and the Irish at Hazeltine in late September.
All right, now, you put this in perspective. You know, the majors are done. Summer, well, it's not coming to a close yet, but the majors are gone, and as you mentioned, four first-timers won each of the majors. And then for, I don't know, a decade and a half, 2 decades, we had, you know, one guy at the top for the most part. How do you put this in perspective, Gary? How would you look at this golf season at the PGA level, you know, in terms of the majors? Is there anything to glean from this at all?
Well, you have to look back, I think, at 2015 when Jordan Spieth won two majors, his first two. Jason Day won his first. And there's really no such thing as a big three or a big four right now, because look what happened this year. It's just a wide open field out there every single week, whether it's a major or not. And with the Olympics coming up now, with many of the top players in the world not electing to represent their country in Brazil, the Olympics, the opening ceremonies on Friday night, I think it's going to continue on. We've got, you know, the Tour Championship comes up for 4 weeks, including the Deutsche Bank at Boston over Labor Day weekend. The fourth and final week of that is in mid-September, and we'll, you know, we'll do the $10 million top prize. Then we've got the Ryder Cup at the end of September, so still lots to look forward to, starting with the Olympic tournament, which, you know, women are playing 4 days, the men are going to play 4 days. So there's still a lot more to watch, and but right now there's no one clear-cut player of the year,
right,
here, if you will.
Right. Okay, let me just bring it back locally, I guess, for my final question. You know, we're so much entrenched into this drought. The lawn out front is just brown. We got a little rain this weekend, but everything is burnt out. What's the status of the golf courses in the area?
Very dry, and the fairways are getting burned up in some places. You know, a lot of the courses have their own water, so they can water to their heart's content. But most courses don't have their own water, so they have to be very sparing the way they do distribute it. And the number one place to distribute it is on the greens, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Just the nature of the potential business, which is the nature of the game, that you can get a foot throughout. And we're in a serious drought situation right now. And the courses can always play because there'll be something up on top of the top. There'll be some type of grass, whether it's dead or alive.
Mm-hmm.
And they can keep playing the game, no matter how good or how bad the weather has been. But right now, we could show you several days of steady, but not too heavy rain. Not that you haven't known the last couple of days, which is about 7 or 8 inches of flooding, but it's just one of the nature's ways of reminding us who's the boss, even on the golf course.
Yeah, it's a balancing act. And so what happens when the fairways dry out? It gets hard, you know, like playing on pavement?
So not quite pavement, but it does get hard. The balls roll a lot more, and it's you play the ball where it lies or where it rolls. And,
okay.
This is the first time I think we've talked about a drought.
Yeah.
Situation like we have here since we've been talking golf for maybe, you know, 6, 7, 8 years now.
Yeah, we've been doing it for a while, and usually it's the cold weather or the unexpectedly nice weather, but yeah, never this condition. And yeah, I was talking to a gentleman from California on Friday night, and he played some golf here. He's a golfer out there, but he was talking about playing in Ireland. And I didn't realize there were so many great golf courses in Ireland. I obviously knew about Scotland, but I didn't realize the Irish have a lot of golf in them as well.
No question. And they don't have to worry about droughts because
no.
It's usually pretty wet.
That's for sure.
A lot of the year is wet and damp over there, even in the summer. So, you know, they call it the Emerald Isle for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
It's always green, whether it's the rain or the droppings from the millions and millions of sheep and goats and other animals they have over there in the farms. And they're doing fine. One last thing we should mention, though, which we talked about, you know, it's been a great year for local golf. We talked about Mark Turner's brother James won the New England Amateur 2 weeks ago, and last week, Charlie May from Topsfield, Masconoma, Elon College qualified for the U.S. Amateur, which is out in down in the Detroit area at Oakland Hills, where Ben Hogan made his famous comment, "I brought this great monster to its knees when he won the 1951 U.S. Open." So Charlie May from Maskinovit and Topsfield gets to play in Frankfurt. Gets to play out there, I think, is the 15th to the 21st, with 311 other top amateurs around the country. And the U.S. Amateur Championship is a great accomplishment by Charlie. We have to congratulate him.
Great stuff, great stuff. Gary, before I let you go, quick update on the U.S. Senior Open coming to the Salem Country Club next year, and then perhaps a little teaser on what you're doing Friday in the Salem News.
Thanks, Rick. This year's Senior Open is being played next week at Scioto Country Club in Columbus. So a bunch of us from Salem Country Club's championship committee will be making that trip out to Columbus, not by bus, not by taxi, but by plane, and to see how the operation works in 2016, keeping in mind that they haven't had the Senior Open since 2001. A lot of things have changed operationally these last 15 years, and a lot of the key personnel in the organization at Salem for the Senior Open want to get out there next week and take some notes. Beyond that, we've got, a pretty important story to report Friday. The area is losing another one of its outstanding club professionals to semi-retirement, and that'll most likely be the lead item in the column on Friday. Thanks for asking.
Okay. All right, Gary. Now, will you be back next Monday, or are we going to miss you for a week?
I hope I'll be here.
Okay. All right. Well, have a great trip, and take a lot of notes.
Thanks, Rick. Have a great week.
All right, Gary. Thank you so much. Take care. That is Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, and general all-around knowledgeable guy about sports. But that's his passion, is golf. But great stuff all the way around. Okay. Now, I do want to take a look as we get through our first half hour here at the Intertown Twilight League baseball league that is entering the playoff season right now. I did get a hold of Brian LaFada, who, of course, is also the Gloucester High School baseball coach, and he has run the league, or at least his team, for several years. But Brian's on the road, and so we hope to talk to him soon about this. But in the meantime, with the playoffs getting underway, let me just see. I believe they started yesterday. Let me just check Nick's story. 1 week to go in the Intertown Twilight Baseball League season. So there's one week to go. And we have one game report in from tonight, which is on the ITL website. And let me just read this to you, if I may. The Beverly Giants outlasted the Ipswich Chiefs on Sunday after four lead changes, squeaking out a 5-4 win at Cooney Field. The Beverly Giants finally managed to grab the lead after a strong seventh inning. A hit by pitch scored Luke McDonald and gave Beverly the lead for good. McDonald got himself in scoring position with two extra base hits for the Giants. For Beverly, that is, he doubled in the fifth and seventh innings. Dan Cashman kept contact to a minimum. He struck out eight Ipswich batters. Cashman allowed three earned runs on four hits and two walks over seven innings. Pat Curran ended up on the wrong side of the pitching decision. He was charged with a loss. Lasted an inning, walked two, struck out one, allowed one run. And the top of the first saw Ipswich take an early 2-0. Nate Frangillo started the rally for Ipswich with a single. A few plays later, John Panero stole home. Scoreboard lit up again for Ipswich when Frangillo scored on an RBI single by Ahmed Atiyat. So that is yesterday's 5-4 win for Beverly over Ipswich in the ITL. Now, see if I can find the standings here. Here they are. Manchester Essex is in first place. Looks like it's a rather comfortable lead with 36 points. They have a record of 18-4. In second is Rowley. They are at 15-6-1 with 31 points. Rockport is in third place. They are at 13-7-1 with 27 points. And that's it for winning records. After that, Topsfield comes in at 8-12. Beverly is 8-14. Hamilton is 6-15. And Ipswich has 5 wins, 15 losses. And again, the ITL playoffs begin next week. Today at, in Ipswich, Rowley is at Ipswich. That game got started at just before 6 o'clock. Tomorrow, Hamilton Wenham is at Manchester Essex. And on Wednesday, Beverly is at Topsfield. Ipswich is at Rowley. So that's the first 3 days of the week with games in the ITL. And as I said, next week, we'll see if we can get some information on that playoff system. ITL been around since 1929, the Intertown Twilight Baseball League, and of course around here we just call it the Intertown League. Great competitive baseball. We will take a break, come back, and we're going to see what transpires. Either we will have Gloucester Times sports editor Nick Kukuru, or we will check in with the Gloucester High School principal, James Cook, but we'll do that all after we take a break. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday on MSONewsSports.com. Don't forget MSO Radio 24/7 every day on MSO News Sports. Look at that top left-hand corner. You can click on that to play our playlist. And, of course, we also post it as a news story every day. Check it out. We'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. One of the ways to judge a company is in its staying power. At Moynihan Lumber, we've been doing our thing now for 55 years. Serving all of Greater Boston, Moynihan Lumber offers lumber and building materials, doors and windows, decking, kitchen cabinets, and Ace Hardware. Visit Moynihan Lumber at any of our three locations, in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
Hi, this is Jeff Klickstein, General Manager at Moore GMC in Danvers. Did you know that we're a family-owned and operated dealer that's been serving the North Shore since 1969? When you come to see us, you're treated like part of our family. GMC has a great lineup with Sierra pickups, the ever-popular Acadia, and the redesigned 2016 Terrain. Our service department ranks as one of the best in customer satisfaction because we respect our customers' busy schedule, and we do repairs as quickly as possible with the least amount of inconvenience to you. There is clearly a difference, not only in selecting the right vehicle for your needs, but selecting the right dealership to buy it from. We are the dealer that will provide you with the best buying experience possible. We are conveniently located off Route 128 at Exit 23, 80 High Street in Danvers. I personally invite all of you to come in, come visit us, see why our customers keep coming back for all their automotive needs.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com.
Keep coming, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Sylvan Street Grill has a great new Game Time menu featuring delicious new dishes, specials, and all-time favorites, too.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Bradford Tavern, the Rowley destination restaurant, featuring many modern touches, nestled in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, seafood, and many quality daily specials. The Bradford Tavern is open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to midnight, serving lunch and dinner. See you soon at the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, 89 Haverhill Street, Route 133. And check us out at bradfordtavern.com.
Okay, we are back, and I am so happy to announce that Nick Kukuru, the sports editor of the Gloucester Times, is with us. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, any vacation coming up with you or what? What's going on?
I was on vacation a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
About a month ago, actually. I took a little vacation.
All right. You know, people ask me, where do you go on vacation in the summertime? And my stock answer is, if I didn't live in Gloucester, I couldn't afford to vacation here. So I stay right here.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Yep. We went up camping in Maine for a long weekend, so that's about as far away as we're going to go this summer.
Where'd you go? Where'd you take the kids?
Old Orchard Beach.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. All right, Nick, we're just kind of batting stuff around. We just put our football schedule together, and we just announced it. We got a lot of games, of course, all over the conference, but one thing that's up in the air for us is the at Beverly games, because, as you know, they've taken down the stands on what was the home side of the field, and they just have the stands on the sunny side now, but there's no press box, so we don't know what's going to happen there. Have you heard any status of Hurd Stadium?
I have not. Same as you. I just know those stands have been torn down. I haven't heard any update on when they're going to be replaced, which should be interesting. I may have to walk the sidelines for that game.
There you go. And I know I'm excited about going over to Danvers to their new Dr. Deering Stadium. That's going to be fun to do games from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that the trend here. I know Revere's had the new one, Gloucester, and they all look relatively similar, which is awesome. Just has their new field, which is great. A lot of buzz around the program. They had one of their best seasons that they never had last season. And now they've got a new stadium to keep the buzz going.
Absolutely. All right. Now, a loaded question, but I toured the Newell Stadium a couple of weeks ago, and it's very disturbing to me to see that foundation is cracked and upheaved in several places along the stands. And, there's some standing water under the stands. There's a lot of mold under there. And this stadium is just going into its fourth season. It's only 3 years old. So a little bit of concern for the city, I would think.
Yeah, a lot of concern. I know the foundation there has been sinking a bit, and now finally it kind of caused a little bit of a crack in that, part of the foundation underneath. It's tough. It's too bad. I don't know what to make of it. Hopefully it's something that can be fixed and can be fixed in a timely manner. It's certainly not looking good. I've seen those pictures like everyone else. We had actually reported on it back in the spring. I think that was before it's gotten this serious, though. It's gotten far worse since we reported on it back, I think it was in April or May, that it was sinking a bit. You can barely notice it then. Now, you can notice it even when you're driving by on Centennial Ave.
Oh, yeah. Nick, and recently, with the high schools out of session now, you did some features that I think were really fascinating on looking back over the sports year, and you picked your athletes of the year from each of the communities, and I don't know, you feel like going over a quick rundown of those, what you had in the paper?
Yeah, absolutely. Athletes of the year.
Yeah.
Sounds good, this year was pretty tough. We had a good crop this year. I know, Gloucester, actually, John Phil Pott was the male athlete of the year. I mean, three-sport all-star. He was all-conference defensive player of the year in football. You know, we saw what he did with the basketball team on both ends of the floor. I mean, he did the things you notice and the things you don't notice, both in football and in basketball, which is great to see. And then he comes out in baseball and leads the team and wins and tosses a no-hitter. So, I mean, definitely deserving there for John Philpott. Three sports with, three vastly different skill sets, and he was an all-star in all three of them. And
wow, yeah.
And on the girls' side, it was so close that I had to do co-wins for the first time ever. That I think 8 or 9 years we've been naming our athletes of the year, and this is the first time we had co-winners. Both juniors, too, so it'll be interesting this season to see what they do as seniors. With Sierra Rudolph and Rachel Alexander were both just the cream of the crop this year. You know, Sierra Rudolph, one of the best high jumpers in the state. She finished sixth in the All-State in the spring, I believe fifth in the winter, but she had the second highest jump of all the runners in there. It's just, comes down to those funky tiebreakers once you get into the state level of competition. I mean, she's the real deal. Won the Division III section in the indoor season, the first Gloucester girl to win a sectional high jump title. And Rachel Alexander, I mean, we see what the field hockey team's been doing, just continues to take off, and I thought she was their best player. I mean, every time she had the ball in her hands, it seemed like there was a threat to score. There was a scoring chance. And then she turned that around, and lacrosse season was the same way, just a dynamic athlete.
Yep.
And, over in Rockport, we had Andrew Wehrman, he was a two-sport all-star. I believe he was the only male in the school to be an all-star in two sports. Great leading scorer in soccer. They had, last fall with Dave Curley, their team kind of had a really, really interesting soccer season where they were really down in the dumps at one point because they were decimated by injuries, and they did just enough to stay afloat. And, Wehrman was their leading scorer. He kind of put the team on his back know, they treaded water a bit because they had so many injuries. He kind of kept them, you know, from sinking. And then once they got their players back, they took off and got into the tournament. It was great to watch. And on the girls' side, Miranda Rolla was the only athlete in our courts to be all conference, all league in two sports. You know, great forward midfielder on the field hockey team, and then softball. She, I mean, dynamite softball player. She tears the cover off the ball every time comes her way. And then we have the Manchester Essex, Alex Beckman on the boys' side, golf and basketball. Unbelievable golfer, one of the best golfers in the Cal. I mean, Manchester had a young team this year, but he was right at the top of that lineup, just so consistent, leading them in score in every game. And then, you know, in basketball, he was just one of those gritty players down low, not big. He was probably giving up size, you know, in the post every game, and he just went in there and scrapped, led the team to scoring and rebounding. Another all-star performance there.
Mm-hmm.
On the girls' side, why am I drawing a blank?
Oh, and I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that. Well, that's all right. We'll come back with it. And you know what? That'd be a good good promo to say, get the paper, and we'll get that back. Don't worry about it. I know it'll come to you. Nick, in the meantime, we're going to save football and fall sports, of course, for a couple of weeks, and we can talk in detail on that. And I know that you'll have some features coming up in the paper, I'm sure. What's your take now on our local pros, in particular the Red Sox and then the Patriots? How are you looking at these guys?
I think the Red Sox, I mean, they're absolutely flawed. They're absolutely a flawed team, but I think they're going to be right in it, right down to the end. I mean, they may make it, they may not, but it's going to be a real exciting finish because I think they're flawed, but so aren't the Orioles and the Blue Jays. I mean, they're virtually the same team. I think the Blue Jays, I'll give them a slight advantage. They have the best starting pitching of the three. But other than that, there's not much separating them. They all killed the ball. They all have some suspect pitching staffs, and they're going to be in slugfests down the stretch. I think it comes down to the final week of the season.
Hey, can I ask you something? Can I ask you something about the American League East? Because I hear all the time and how weak it is, but you know what? I think it's the opposite. I think they're pretty damn strong. You got three teams.
I disagree. I think it gets that wrapped with, you know, being weak because it's not as top heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's deep because, you know, the Yankees, yeah, they may have been sellers today, but they're a solid team. The Rays are scrappy. But then, you know, you got a three-team race there.
Yeah.
No other division. I mean, sure, maybe they're not as good as Cleveland. Maybe they're not as good as Texas this year. But I don't think there's any division, maybe besides the NL Central, that goes three teams deep like the AL East does.
Yeah, yeah.
With that unbalanced schedule, I mean, that's a difficult schedule they're playing.
Well, this thing about all these road games at the end of the season is mind-boggling to me that the Red Sox have to go through.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. Fortunately, they're not, you know, the Orioles are the one that's really got the biggest disparity between home and road splits, but I think the Red Sox will be fine. I think they'll stay afloat. I think they'll be right there, you know, in the division and the wild card race. I mean, it's looking like a five-team race for the wild card and a three-team race for the AL East. So they're going to be scoreboard watching a lot of teams over the next 2 months.
Well, and a lot of people are looking at apps and Twitter right now because of this trade deadline. You don't think it's any possibility that they're going to give up any of the big three, Bogarts, Betts, or Bradley, do you?
No, I was hearing Bradley's name was thrown around, the potential Chris Sale deal, but they did not pull the trigger on that one.
Thank goodness.
So they're all staying unless something happens with the August 31st waiver deadline. But no, those three guys, I think Bogarts and Betts are as untouchable as it gets as far as any player in the league. I mean, I think Betts is a perennial MVP candidate, and Bogarts is already the best shortstop in the league.
Yeah, yeah. Good, good. I mean, these guys are so exciting to watch. I hope,
they sure are.
You know, and you look at, I can't believe Betts and Bradley. I mean, you know, the way they started off, especially Bradley a couple of years ago. But both of those guys are the old throwback five-tool players because they can run, they can hit, they can throw. You know, they can play defense, and they can go long. I mean, it's incredible that these kids are five-tool players. And three of them, Bogarts is in there, too.
Yeah, exactly. That reminds me, I think he's the next, you know, Andrew McCutchen in Pittsburgh. I think they're both kind of, you know, very similar players, five-tool guys, and they both got those quick hands, quick, you know, swing. And, you know, if I'm a pitcher, why would you give both Betts anything on the inside? Crush it.
He's so quick, I know. All right, so let's turn it over to, is an angry Tom Brady good for for New England Patriots Nation?
Yes. Maybe you'll need a couple weeks to get in the swing of things, but I think so. I think absolutely. I think when Tom Brady's back and in the lineup, I think the Patriots have the best roster in the NFL. I thought they did last year, too, and they blew it, but, you know, I think they're the team to beat this year. I think this is their best shot because they have so many free agents coming up after this season. I think this is the year. If there's going to be another one coming, it's got to be this year.
Well, they also
loaded everywhere.
Yeah, and they picked up, I believe, 5 veteran starters in the off season.
Yeah,
you know, and
Martellus Bennett was an awesome pickup. I think. I mean, he's just an animal. Tight end. He's about the same size as Gronk. He's a great receiver. He can obviously block. They're going to do some damage this year. They're going to be real tough to stop, and their defense is good and young. So
yeah,
their defense might be almost as good as the offense. Actually, at the end of last season, far better than the offense.
So you think they can handle losing Chandler Jones?
Yes, I think Jabal Sheard is just as good, maybe even better. Maybe he's not as versatile as Chandler Jones, but as you know, the pass rushing mold, and Jabal Sheard's great. And mm-hmm. They still have Rob Ninkovich. Malcolm Brown looked good as a rookie last season. I think they'll be perfectly fine. And I think Dante Hightower and Jamie Collins are both top 10 linebackers in the league.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. You got me all excited here now. And then you haven't even mentioned Garoppolo, but he looks fairly competent, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's about the one that's, you know, he's tough to gauge. And from what we've seen in the preseason, I mean, he's a far different skill set than Tom Brady. I mean, I don't want to make the comparison because he's obviously not on that level, but he's got more of an Aaron Rodgers skill set than, you know, a Tom Brady skill set where, you know, he can throw on the run, he can bootleg and make things happen outside of the pocket where, you know, you know, 3-4 steps and the ball's out.
Hey, if we don't have Tom Brady, I'll sure as hell, I'd be happy to take Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, that works.
So, yeah, I don't want to make that comparison yet, but he's got that kind of, that's the type of game he plays.
That's great.
Rodgers. I mean, Aaron Rodgers throws 40 touchdowns and under 10 interceptions every year, so we're not going to get that out of him.
Right. I get that.
That's what I see.
Nick, great talking with you, man. I appreciate it. Can you tease what's coming up in the sports section in the Times this week?
We got making the rounds over, you know, the summer's a good time to get out to those youth clinics. A lot of those local high school coaches, run their youth clinics over the summer. And, you know, I appreciate all the stuff that they helped me out with during, you know, the regular season. So, you know, I like to, you know, repay them back
sure.
their, clinics a little while. Publicity, and you know, it's nice to get the kids, the younger kids' picture in the paper as well. And, actually, got a real interesting feature coming up tomorrow. Ten-year-old Gloucester kid, Ty Wood, is a hockey player, is going over to the Czech Republic to play on, to play in a tournament over there. So that'll be interesting.
Way cool. And Nick, I got to mention too, guys. We do have great coaches on the North Shore, great coaches on Cape Ann.
Oh, absolutely.
But two guys who just stand out to me because of their volunteerism, their talent and their dedication. Steve Rowell up in Rockport and Don Riley in Gloucester.
Yeah, absolutely. And Steve Rowell runs his basketball clinic. You know, he does a full week clinic for the boys and he does a full week clinic for the girls. I mean, he's great. I mean, all the accolades that he picked up in Rockport and, you know, one of the best, you know, players that we've ever seen on the North Shore. And he's still, you know, there in Rockport giving back to the community. And, you know, Don Riley's the same way, whether it's field hockey or hockey. You know, he always seems to have his hand into something. And even I remember back when I was in high school, you know, Donnie Riley didn't coach anything, but he held, you know, nice little fitness clinics that anyone could go to. You know, we used to show up on Monday and he'd, you know, give us a workout. And, you know, always just looking to help, you know, athletes improve their craft.
It's amazing. And they're both so skilled. They're both so talented and so knowledgeable and also great educators. They're fantastic with kids. And I don't think either one of them, I don't think you can give them too much credit. They're such great resources for our community. Mm-hmm. All right, Nick, I guess that's it. So we'll talk in probably a couple of weeks, and we'll get ready for some football.
Sounds good. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Amen. All right, Nick, thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
Thanks, definitely.
Okay, bye-bye. That is Nick Kukuru, who is the sports editor for the Gloucester Times, and just hopscotching the region, as Al Needham would say, for some sports stories and talking all over the place. But, Steve Rowell and Don Riley, oh, my goodness, I can't even describe the dedication and talent, and they both put on they do clinics that help kids in so many different ways with skills that are transferable to from one sport to another, and attitude. They teach attitude as much as anything, and that is just you know, so important in education and so important in sports. So, great guys. Okay, we'll take a break. I do want to come back with an interview I did today with the Gloucester High School principal. It's not a lot of sports, but he is a sports person. And I think you might find it fairly interesting. New principal at Gloucester High is James Cook. James, a longtime English teacher and English program leader, but also was boys soccer coach at Gloucester High School for a number of years, and they did very well under Coach Cook. But now he is the principal at Gloucester High. So we'll come back and talk with Mr. Cook, and then we'll wrap it up after that, and I thank you for joining us. But again, please, if you have any comments, questions, complaints, suggestions, email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. Bill and I, of course, doing most of the grunt work around here, but we've got other guys on board as well. Tim Kearns is off tonight, and we'll have our usual announcers back for football, as we're going to cover probably at least 25 to 30 games on into the playoffs, and of course our final finish with Thanksgiving Day, and hopefully get into the Super Bowl. I don't think our region is going to Foxborough this year, though. I don't know where they'll play, but I don't think it's going to be down at Gillette, but that's okay. That's a ways away. Okay, we'll take our final break of the evening, come right back with our interview with the Gloucester High School principal. You're listening to msonewsports@gmail.com. No, at MSO New Sports. This is MSO New Sports. This is North Shore Sports Night. See, this is why we take a break. Be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan, and today I'd like to speak to you about the North Shore Student Athlete Program. Sponsored by Moynihan Lumber in conjunction with the Salem News, the Daily Item, the Newburyport Daily News, and the Gloucester Times. The program, now in its 24th year, celebrates high school students who excel not just on the playing field, but in the classroom as well. Male and female winners are chosen each month. All student athletes must be nominated by their coaches. Nominations for the program are made via email to nsstudentathlete@gmail.com. Youngsters who are nominated must have a B average or better. Monthly winners are then eligible to be selected as Student Athletes of the Year. Yearly winners and their families are recognized at a luncheon at the Salem Country Club held in early June. Please remember, all youngsters playing a varsity sport at any high school on the North Shore, public, private, or parochial, are eligible.
For the heads of earth, we measure up.
My great pleasure now to be in the office of the new high school principal at Gloucester High School. That's James Cook. And James, first of all, congratulations on getting the job. I know it's a very popular decision among staff and people in the city, so congratulations. Glad you're here.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, James, you've been around a while. You've been in the high school. Let me let you tell a story. How did you get to Gloucester High School originally, and how long you've been in the building?
Sure. So I've been at Gloucester High School since 1999. My wife grew up in Gloucester, went to Gloucester High School. I met her at Emerson College back in the 90s. We were both students there. The day I graduated in 95, I moved up to Cape Ann, spent a couple years in restaurants here, about a year actually, and then went back to school at Tufts University to become a teacher. So I spent a year in their training program there to get an MAT. I was at actually Hamilton Wenham for a year. I was part-time English teacher. I worked in the middle school, and I did various kinds of administrative stuff to kind of make a full-time job. The kind of crossroads for me was I was offered a full-time position there, AP class, the whole thing, in the English department, and a job opened here at Gloucester High School. So Dennis Corker, who was program leader at the time, offered me the job, and then I had that big decision to make, stay at Hamilton Wenham or do what I'd always wanted to do, you know, since coming to Gloucester, which is teach here. And so it took me about a day to really decide, no, I want to be at Gloucester High School, and I've been here ever since.
One of the things I heard about your interview was your passion for Gloucester High School. Where'd that come from, James?
That's a great question. I mean, so I grew up on the South Shore, and when I first visited Gloucester, actually, in 1995, shortly after meeting my wife, there was something about the first day here that really struck me and struck a chord with some of what I grew up with. A lot of people who kind of resilience, a kind of community-minded spirit, a kind of rough and tumble toughness, but also a real acceptance for a lot of people's eccentricities, kind of weirdness. We like our characters here in Gloucester.
Absolutely.
You know. So I never found, you know, some people talk about, you know, you're an outsider, you'll never find, you know, you'll never be welcomed. Well, if you're not born in Gloucester, yeah, you'll never be born in Gloucester, right? You can never kind of, but people are incredibly accepting of people who kind of own who they are, come from where they come. And Gloucester's actually very welcoming of all sorts of people. So I think that's where a lot of my passion came from. And then in the schools, you know, we make amazing things happen with whatever resources we have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if this is what we're given, the teachers, staff, students, we make the best of whatever we're given, even if it's not ideal. And I love that kind of resilience, that kind of creativity that comes from, you know, pushing to do what's best with what you have.
Okay. All right. Well, wish I had thought of all of that when people asked me that question, because I've been here 50 years and I'm still new to the area as well. James, it would be obvious to ask a question about how being a program leader has prepared you or helped prepare you to be an administrator or get into administration, but I want to ask about your coaching, because you started coaching early on. You were a head coach of the varsity soccer, and I just wonder, did that have any influence toward getting you developed or getting you ready as an administrator? Because there are different things you do as a coach than you certainly do as a teacher.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think one of the things about being a coach, it definitely set me down a road of school leadership roles, you know. So that's the first thing. It was my first, or one of my first real leadership roles at the high school. And I was pretty young, again, when I started, especially when I started kind of the JV freshman level. I was very new. And the other thing that's similar to a principal position is trying to understand students, trying to guide students beyond a single classroom. So, you know, what we would try to do on the field, especially when I became head coach, was really try to make sure the values of Gloucester High School, kind of respect for hard work, respect for wherever a player, student, wherever they start, we're going to try to make them better. We're going to try to help that individual grow through what we can offer and then through kind of inspiring that person to work hard. So seeing that not just from the perspective of an English teacher, but from outside the classroom. And, of course, as a principal, you know, when you're, you know, overseeing what's happening on the athletic fields, in all the classrooms, in the hallways and all of this, it gives you that picture of what we're trying to teach kids beyond what's happening in the classroom, but also including what's happening in the classroom. So I think that started for me with coaching.
Mm-hmm. You talk about leadership and being a leader. Comes in so many different styles and shapes and so on, but to get to be a principal, obviously you have to be you have to get the license, you've got to take the courses, you've got to get some experience, but you also, I imagine, just like coaching, you take bits and pieces from other people. So whether you want to mention a name or two or not, what are some of the things maybe that you bring into the job, James, without the experience of having a, you know, being a principal to this point, but you do have, you've got experience, you've dealt with other administrators in many different ways.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I take something from just about every administrator, principal, assistant principal, dean of students, athletic director, all the program leaders. I take a little bit from a lot of different people I've worked with. And one of the things I think that is in common is when we have disagreements, that we keep the focus on what's best for student growth, what's best for helping. And you know, when we talk about student growth, it doesn't just mean, you know, sometimes they need to be challenged as well as supported, right? You know, so providing students with opportunities to stretch themselves, to improve themselves behaviorally, academically, you know, and you'd mentioned athletics before, in extracurricular ways, helping them find their passion. So there are going to be disagreements about whether this attendance policy is better or, you know, this way of responding to student tardiness or various policies, but when we have the debate, and all these great, you know, people I've had an opportunity to see often will disagree, but when the focus is on, you know, what is going to help the body of students grow and mature and become citizens in our community, which is what ultimately we're looking for, productive citizens in the community, you know, as long as we can disagree, but we have a common focus. And that's what I've seen from, you know, a ton of great leaders that I've worked with.
I think probably wrapping this up from my perspective, I'd like to ask you, a month on the job now, as we are into August already, and boy, the doors are going to be open here pretty soon for the kids. What has been the most pleasant surprise? I'm sure that there are, going from one job to another job, there's always unpleasant surprises, but what's been a pleasant surprise or two in this last month for you?
Sure. I think I really have enjoyed working with colleagues, with other teachers here, program leaders, folks up at the district office on the hiring process. I'm really excited about some of the people that we'll be bringing in the fall, and we'll be putting in front of our students, we'll be leading our students. And so working as a team with various stakeholders, we've also worked with some in situations with parents, some students on selecting and hiring some of these people. I've really enjoyed meeting the candidates and meeting, you know, working collaboratively as a team to bring those people in. So that's been the most pleasant surprise.
Well, I hope I get invited back to this further down the road to see how things are going. But, James, any final comments about your new position here at Gloucester High School?
The only thing I'd say is, I think it's a final comment, is I'd like to really kind of put out there the three goals that we're going to be focused on this year. And the first goal has to do with what I was talking about earlier, looking for how do we promote student growth in every classroom every day. So that as a goal for the school. The second goal is we're trying to help all our students become inquiry learners, students who have curiosity, who investigate things, construct understandings and express themselves, and then reflect on how they do that, whether they're in a shop class, whether they're in their English class, or doing the scientific inquiry, using technology to help students become inquiry learners. And the third thing is, while we're doing all this, we want to support students' social-emotional growth as teens. We want to remember that it's not just academics, but it's fueled by their social and their emotional well-being. And so with those three things in mind, that's going to help guide us through the rest of the year.
Starting off really slow, right?
We go with big things.
All right. Yep. Thank you, James. That is James Cook, who is the new principal at Gloucester High School. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. All right, there you go. We made it through the hour, and I appreciate your taking part and listening, and tell other people about it. And again, we got our football broadcast coming up in about 5 or 6 weeks. Looking forward to that. We'll have the schedule posted here very soon. Don't forget, every morning we have our news updates, our sports update, and features also in a couple of places. We put it right on our front page post, and of course, at MSO Radio 24/7, radio 24/7, right in the top left-hand corner of the website. Check that out as well. And of course, you know, stop by the website occasionally, 3 or 4 times during the day, because we're out there getting news, getting interviews, checking things out, and posting it as soon as we can. We appreciate your involvement and your checking us out as well. Okay, so that'll do it. Again, Tim Kearns off this week. Hope to be back next week. On behalf of Bill Newell, the voice of the North Shore, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Thanks for being with us.
This is MSO Radio at msonewsports.com.